Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Barbell Medicine Podcast, where we bring modern medicine to strength and conditioning and strength and conditioning to modern medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Jordan Feigenbaum. This is episode 307. This is just a case file. It was actually supposed to be in our last podcast, but this is probably one of our longer cases, and I felt like it deserved its own podcast, so I'm releasing it here separately. So, as always, I have the second most handsome doctor in North America, Dr. Austin Baraki. He is going to put on his doctor hat, and he's going to walk us through this case report. Now, we will still have our normal podcast later on this week, but without any further ado, let's get into this case report. We can't let the people go without their weekly dose of medical case reports. We can't do it. It's not fair. And so I think, you know, I think you're going to get halfway there.
Okay.
If you get the exact diagnosis, I mean, again, I shouldn't be surprised, but I will be more impressed. But I suspect you're going to get halfway there. Very similar to Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer. Shout out to John Bon Jovi.
All right. All sorts of crossovers this episode. Let's do it.
It's a mashup. Okay. Here we go. A 39-year-old male presents to a neurology clinic as a referral from primary care office for evaluation of severe headache lasting 4 days in the context of an elevated high-sensitivity CRP, that's C-reactive protein. He was seen in the emergency department yesterday for the same complaint, where he denied any difficulty with speech, vision, or gait, and he had a CT brain that was negative. In the ED, he was given tramadol, it's a pain medication, and an anti-nausea medication, metoclopramide, and a neck collar, apparently, and was told to follow up in neurology clinic. In the neurology clinic, he reports the headache is the same and that it started the day after he was lifting heavy weights. He describes it as mainly in the occipital area, that's the back of your head, and that it radiates to the left side of his head near the top. He reports nausea, a new cough that has been going on with this headache, also sweating and numbness in his limbs. He denies any blurry vision, any limb weakness, only numbness, and no gait disturbances. He does report a history of cervical spondylosis, which is a nonspecific degenerative change in the cervical spine that's typically common in older adults, but it can narrow the area that the spinal cord travels through. So before I go any further, I know I gave you a lot there. Any thoughts on this patient?
Wow. You gave me a lot of information, and I'll also point out, you know, you're giving me a case from a neurology clinic, i.e. a somewhat of a different specialty, although I do deal with neurological complaints from time to time.
There we go. All
just
right.
Because of, you know, your initial caveats, we got to come back with them. But anyway, headache. Yeah, common presentation. So we have a 39-year-old guy without any medical history that you gave me coming in with what I will call an acute headache, and then some associated symptoms that are a little bit odd and kind of distributed, the cough, the sweating, and some numbness in his limbs. I'll just start with a discussion of this headache. And so headache, we typically divide into just primary headaches that people just get, like a tension headache or a migraine. There's a few different varieties of that. And then there's this whole category of what we call secondary headaches, headaches that are caused by an identifiable underlying issue. And so we look for certain kind of similar to red flag signs that we look for with back pain. There are similar types of red flags that we look for in the context of headache that might lead us to suspect what we call a secondary headache syndrome. And headache, secondary headaches, I tend to divide them up somewhat anatomically, meaning what parts of the head can hurt all the way from the outside in. So we can have, you know, things affecting the skull or the sinuses, the eyes, the ears, you know, the outer part. Also within the skull, so that we have the meninges, the brain, the blood vessels, the ventricles, things like that inside. And then there are systemic disorders that can secondarily cause a headache. So this is like somebody who has sleep apnea or caffeine withdrawal or the flu or certain medications like nitrates and things like that. So that's the big kind of picture categorization that I use to break down secondary headaches. The very odd aspects of this case is that there's not a great overlap in my mind between headache and a cough as far as a lesion in the skull, which is the kind of thing that we worry about the most outside of, for example, somebody having cancer in the lung that spread to their brain or something like that. But that's unlikely in this scenario. And then pairing that with sweating and numbness in the limbs, all of those things have, you know, minimally overlapping kind of diagnoses in between them. So I have a very distributed set of diagnoses in my mind that are not really coalescing into a distinct syndrome that I recognize at this time. So what would I be doing? I mean, that you mentioned that a CT scan in the ER was negative. There's different types of CT scans that can be done. A plain old regular CT scan is best to make sure that there's not a fracture of the skull and there's no blood in the brain. But short of that, it doesn't really tell us a ton more. We can sometimes do imaging like angiograms, looking for dissections and other sorts of vascular problems. There are also problems, like I mentioned, in the ventricles, like if somebody has elevated cerebrospinal fluid pressure or low cerebrospinal fluid pressure or an infection in the cerebrospinal fluid, all sorts of other inflammatory disorders. And so I'm most interested to get a little bit more in detailed information about whether this gentleman has any past medical history, whether he has any immune compromising conditions like HIV, what his vital signs look like, a neurological exam. And really all this is going to help me before I start trying to put out diagnoses into the world, actually figure out what is the syndrome that I'm really trying to get to the bottom of here, because it's not really coalesced quite yet.
Yeah. In neuroanatomy, I mean, this is like, you know, you take it during your first year of medical school, but there a lot of the questions that you will get are kind of like localize the lesion, like where is the problem? Because yeah, there is some sort of like overlapping signs and symptoms that allow you to kind of figure out where this is at. Not only like, oh, is this brain or outside of the skull, but like specific areas within the brain. And then you're like, oh, maybe there's a clot or a bleed or like a mass or some other sort of destructive issue going on there. Because again, everything kind of fits. You're like, oh, it's here, which means I should have signs on this side of the body in these particular areas. And you're like, great. Okay, now that I know where it is, let's go take a picture of it and see what's going on. But this is, yeah, when I read the initial case presentation, I go, odd. The neck collar thing to me, I'm like, what the, if they were suspecting trauma, like it, I assume if that was the case that he did get it from the ED, they did, you know, x-rays on top of the CT scan, but they also didn't say what type it was. Yeah. So I just assumed it was like CT non-con, like make sure there's no blood in the cranium. Okay. So I'm going to give you some more stuff here on his exam and workup. So the patient appears distressed in a neck collar. His vital signs were significant for elevated blood pressure. He's in the 140s. Systolic. His physical exam was significant for tongue deviation to the left upon protrusion. He did have an intact gag reflex. His uvula was central, and the rest of his sort of neurological exam was only significant for a left plantar reflex that was extensor, so the Babinski sign on the left side. Otherwise, he had a normal sort of musculoskeletal exam otherwise. He had a CT angiogram of his head with and without contrast showed no arterial dissection. He had an MRI of the brain that showed mild sinusitis, but otherwise was unremarkable. There's a lot more stuff to give you, but I'm going to stop right there and then just kind of see if you have any additional thoughts.
Yeah, this is increasingly bizarre, and we're definitely getting towards the kind of thing that if I were seeing this patient, I would end up likely consulting a neurologist for some assistance with. We do have some odd observations here. So the tongue deviation to the left, you know, can be something that we see with a particular problem with one of the cranial nerves. And the plantar reflex. So again, this is just part of how widely distributed this syndrome is. He has a headache. We have numbness in his limbs, which itself has a bit of an odd overlap, and then tongue, and then one of the, you know, plantar reflexes in the foot is abnormal. So I'm really continuing to have difficulty narrowing down the localization of this problem, if indeed it does localize, versus if we have some kind of more distributed, I don't know, metabolic inflammatory disorder. Because, you know, the CT angiogram and the MRI of his brain being essentially normal here is extremely reassuring for a lot of things. So when I think of like sudden onset headache, there are mainly vascular considerations in the brain that can lead to catastrophic complications. And then an MRI of the brain being normal is extremely sensitive to rule out a lot of things in the skull, in the cranium, in the brainstem, all over the place there. So, you know, the other tools from a neurological standpoint, if I wanted to try to think through this as a neurologist would to in my amateur way, I mean, the other tools that we have to get to the bottom of neurological syndromes outside of serologic blood testing, which is not typically helpful in a lot of neurologic conditions, is a lumbar puncture, EMG testing and EEG testing. And nothing about this seems like a seizure. And so consideration of lumbar puncture could be something to further pursue some kind of inflammatory process going on in the you know, cerebrospinal fluid and the meninges, things like that. Because there are, you know, you mentioned the elevated CRP up front, which is something that suggests inflammation. And when we see inflammation, we think of things like infections and autoimmune diseases and cancers and things like that. But, you know, this patient had a relatively acute presentation. And so I am interested in potentially a lumbar puncture in this patient, I think, and going a bit further down that route, because that is one of the remaining tools that I have at my disposal. The rest of his kind of more peripheral neurological exam, I'm trying to think of, is there going to be any utility of imaging anything down below, you know, the neck level, the spinal cord, things like that. And, you know, while there may be, because there are certain neurological conditions that can lead people to have, you know, neurological lesions in multiple places, particularly at different times and things like that, I'm, you know, his presenting main concern was the headache, and doing that is unlikely to get me much closer on that. So I think that's kind of where I might be headed next.
Yeah. I mean, if it makes you feel any better, this was in the neurology clinic, right? So presumably seeing a neurologist.
Yeah.
And they were like, shoulder shrug. We don't know, but you seem relatively stable outside of these kind of unexplained signs, but we're going to send you home. And they did. They sent him home.
Oh, no.
So he didn't get admitted or whatever. Yeah. So the patient was sent home, but re-presented 3 days later with the same complaints, plus new onset dysphagia, just meaning they have difficulty swallowing. Usually people can, in the worst case, they can aspirate something and choke on it. But if it's milder, sometimes they'll just notice, I'm have difficulty swallowing and eating and such. So now the exam shows a uvula deviated to the right, tongue deviation upon protrusion to the right, a normal eye exam. He had a normal upper body musculoskeletal exam, the same lower extremity exam that I reported to you earlier, but he had decreased pinprick sensation over his left shoulder in the C6 dermatome region. If you remember your dermatome man from the University of Michigan anatomy resource, shout out to Dr. Goodmurphy for that, because it is forever burned into my hippocampus. Labs, I got some labs for you because he went to the ED. So he got some labs. His white count was 13, so mildly elevated. He had a procalcitonin test. Procal is a serum biomarker that's sometimes helps distinguish between bacterial infection and other causes of inflammation. It was just outside the reference range, and I knew that you were going to kind of shrug your shoulders at that. His CRP, again, is still elevated, 116, 0.4, which normal is less than 3. His ESR is 52, normal is less than 15 on these particular labs. They did an LP in the emergency room. High protein count at 904, which is normal, is 150 to 450 on this particular lab, and he had lymphocytes in the lumbar puncture. Otherwise, it was relatively unremarkable. They got some serologies pending for HIV, herpes simplex, for HIV, and for varicella as well. Before I go any further, any thoughts now on this man's presentation?
Oh yeah, okay. So this is I feel like a very complicated case, obviously, may even be too complicated for our audience, because I'll spare them ranting about, you know, the utility of procalcitonin in a syndrome like this, but I'll throw that away for now. So just, I'm going to try to re-summarize this dude's case. So 39-year-old guy, I'm not really aware of any medical history, with acute headache, some other kind of vague, non-specific symptoms, some varying, you know, focal neurologic deficits to include some tongue deviation, uvular deviation, dysphagia, and then found to have markedly elevated CRP up to 116. That is extremely high. So he has this very inflammatory syndrome characterized by a headache and then some varying neurological deficits. So as I requested previously, it sounds like they did come around and do an LP a few days later, I suppose, than I might have in this patient. And that lumbar puncture shows evidence of inflammation. So we have kind of an inflammatory cerebrospinal fluid profile with lymphocytes, and lymphocytes are a particular type of white blood cell. And to some extent, when we do these studies, the type of white blood cell that's present can help us to narrow down the type of issue that may be going on. Unfortunately, you know, I wasn't really expecting him to have bacterial, you know, meningitis, because he'd be dead by now. And that would be the kind that would give me a strong neutrophilic kind of response. So I would, if I had to guess what I was going to get, it was going to be a lymphocytic cerebrospinal fluid, which can be something that we see in a couple bacterial infections that are less common. Things like Lyme and syphilis and things like that, I think, can do it, as well as various other autoimmune inflammatory conditions. And then certain cancers, although you're less likely to detect a cancer when you do a lumbar puncture like this. And so, you know, when I see something that looks this inflamed in the cerebrospinal fluid, the first thing that you have to look for is infections. And these days we have like multiplex PCR arrays that can test for a whole variety of viruses. So we can see things like, you know, various enteroviruses, which are extremely common, West Nile virus, actually more common than people realize, which actually may be something that is going on here now that I think about it a little bit more. And then we also have to deliberately send other tests, things like testing for Lyme and syphilis and things like that in the CSF, as well as a much longer array of things that, again, I would do in real life that I will spare the audience at this point. And then the other thing that I think of, you know, there are certain autoimmune conditions that can get involved. This is a bit dramatic for things like sarcoidosis getting to the brain and lupus and things like that, which, although still technically possible, if I came up empty in some of the infectious testing, I might go a bit further down that rabbit hole. And then anytime I see, you know, a very difficult to explain inflammatory syndrome with a raging high CRP, then other things that I think about are vasculitis. And so, you know, vascular inflammation is not something that would necessarily be detected on a CT angiogram, and that would be the last place that I would go. There are certain other more advanced forms of testing to include certain targeted biopsies or, you know, certain forms of invasive angiograms that can be done to assess that a bit further. So that is kind of where I'm at right now, wanting to pursue a more expansive infectious evaluation based on that lumbar puncture, and then certain autoimmune inflammatory conditions to include the ones that I mentioned, and potentially vasculitis.
Yeah. So they were also impressed with the elevated CRP, and so they sent out for a bunch of rheumatological conditions, autoimmune conditions. Also, a vasculitis workup was performed, and they found that he had a very high titers for antiphospholipid antibody. Subsequently, they did an MRI of the veins of the brain that were unremarkable, and neurology then threw their hands up and they said, you know what, do another MRI. And they did it with contrast this time, and it showed a filling defect of the left sigmoid sinus and the internal jugular vein on the left side. So now, Dr. Baraki, I will have you try to interpret this radiological finding in the context of a positive antiphospholipid titer as to why this gentleman presented like he did.
Yeah. So antiphospholipid syndrome is an example of a hypercoagulable condition, a condition that leads people to be very prone to clotting. I will say that the diagnosis of antiphospholipid syndrome is pretty complicated, and again, something else that's outside the scope of this podcast for most of our audience, and requires a bit more testing than just like one positive serological test. But we have that test that raises some suspicion, and we have what looks like a blood clot in one of the kind of venous sinuses in his skull. And so this sounds like a venous sinus thrombosis, which can explain his acute headache. That is a known cause of acute headache. When we think of vascular problems that can lead to headache, there's things like arterial dissections, which the ER appropriately thought of way up front, but there's also, you know, cerebral vasoconstriction that can cause headaches. That's all arterial stuff. And then venous stuff, like venous occlusion, like from a thrombus. And so that's a situation that we're dealing with here. He had an acute clot in his venous sinus due to antiphospholipid syndrome, which would require a bit more, you know, detective work to prove whether or not he has. And that can also often happen in association with lupus. And so that would be something I would dig a bit further as well to see if he had lupus. And part of the reason why is just having that venous sinus thrombosis can definitely cause the headache, but does not explain a ton of the other stuff that he had. So for example, the cough, the sweating, the limb numbness, some of these other like odd neurological findings that don't correlate with anything that was seen on his MRI, those are not explained by the clot. And so to the extent you need to find an explanation for those things, you're going to have to think more broadly. And, you know, I suppose one of the things that can do just about anything is lupus, but lupus can also be mimicked by many other conditions, including infections like syphilis and all sorts of other stuff. So this guy would be getting a ton of testing. But at this point, the working diagnosis is dural venous sinus thrombosis due to antiphospholipid syndrome with or without underlying lupus.
Yeah, that was the diagnosis, central venous thrombosis, secondary to antiphospholipid syndrome. They also found out that he was positive for varicella zoster. And so he started on a cyclovir, also started on warfarin, gabapentin, and Tylenol, discharged home. His recovery course was complicated by a left mastoid bone abscess, which was treated. And overall, he recovered well with complete recanalization of his sigmoid sinus. So did pretty well.
That is a wild case. And the zoster, you know, zoster as a that's the same virus that causes shingles that people will have heard of or potentially experienced. It's very, you know, it has a strong neurological predisposition or tropism, I guess would be the word, and vascular tendencies as well. And so, you know, that's something that can do something like this. It is interesting. He had no other findings that would be strongly suggestive of zoster outside of that serological finding, but good on them for checking it. So cool.
Yeah, pretty wild. I read the case. I go, this is far too complicated. I know that it is, but wow, I just had to suffer through reading all of that. I'm going to make everybody else suffer too. But yeah. You know.
Well, I know we have some neurologists in our audience, so hopefully a humble internist made them proud here. But
yeah, there you go. As far as pearls go, I don't know that we need to talk a lot about cerebral venous sinus thrombosis. It's a relatively rare type of stroke, and we did do a stroke episode 291. I've linked that in the description below. But what you need to know is that this is a relatively rare cause of stroke. Less than 1% of all strokes. It's more prevalent in younger individuals overall, but relatively rare. And then I just briefly wanted to talk about headaches, which we also did an episode on headaches. Now, since this is the Barbell Medicine podcast, we're predominantly talking about exercise or things pertaining to exercise or their lifestyle behavioral change and such. Well, headaches that occur during or immediately after exercise without any attributable cause are called primary exercise headaches. This guy did not have that. He had a secondary headache because he had another cause for it that was diagnosed, in this case, maybe like almost 2 weeks later. But in this case, when there is no like underlying cause and it's a primary exercise headache, there are a lot of potential things that need to be ruled out to sort of make that diagnosis. And so the current guidelines suggest that if you have new headaches, you've not had headaches before, that happens during exercise, you should be evaluated by a physician. Current guidelines actually recommend some sort of brain imaging to rule out potentially nefarious causes. There's probably more of a conversation there about, you know, how high a value is that sort of recommendation, but that's the current guideline anyway. I've linked all of that in the description below. Austin, congratulations. That's your most amazing work yet. And you're welcome for not subjecting you to read that actual case report. Oh boy.
Yeah. I would say this was probably the toughest one we've done so far. So nice job on digging it up.
All right, that's a wrap on this Barbell Medicine podcast. It's a special edition, just a case report. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this. Before you guys go anywhere, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. It really helps drive traffic to our podcast so we can keep bringing you all the latest nuance in health and fitness. From everyone here at Barbell Medicine, I'm Dr. Jordan Feigenbaum. We'll catch you next time right here on the Barbell Medicine podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.